Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
I came in like a wrecking ball. I never hit so hard in love. All I wanted was to break your walls. All you ever did was wreck me. Yeah, you wreck me. I put you high up in the sky.
Thank you very much. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Today is the day we put aside to remember fallen heroes and to pray that no heroes will ever have to die for us again. It's a day of thanks for the valor of others, a day to remember the splendor of America and those of her children who rest in this cemetery and others. It's a day to be with the family and remember.
You know, that to me is always the voice of not just Memorial Day, but my voice of America's commemorations. And certainly Ronald Reagan in 1986 talking about this day is one of my very favorite speeches on the subject.
I was thinking this morning that across the country, children and their parents will be going to the town parade, and the young ones will sit on the sidewalks and wave their flags as the band goes by. Later, maybe they'll have a cookout or a day at the beach, and that's good. Because today is a day to be with the family and to remember.
Absolutely. And, you know, it is sometimes a little bit of a sort of a fine line to walk to, you know, talk about the day and think about whether it, you know, the ways we celebrate it, the ways we partake are really honoring the people who sacrificed for us. And I love that he's including all of that, all of the very normal things in this, because I think a lot of times that is what the, you know, military view as their mission is, to provide normal at great cost for the people who don't have to pay that price.
At the grave of a hero, we end not with sorrow at the inevitable loss, but with the contagion of his courage, and with a kind of desperate joy, we go back to the fight. Well, all of these men were different, but they shared this in common. They loved America very much. There was nothing they wouldn't do for her, and they loved with the sureness of the young. It's hard not to think of the young in a place like this, for it's the young who do the fighting and dying when a peace fails and a war begins.
You know, I see occasionally I'll see on Facebook a meme that I appreciate quite a bit that will have a picture of a veteran, you know, walking around, you know, maybe he's 80. Okay, 75, walking around with a Vietnam veteran hat on, and the post, and then it'll have a side by side of, you know, some kid in the jungle carrying his M16 or his M60, or, you know, walking, and, you know, that 75-year-old in the Vietnam veteran hat was more badass than you'll ever be when he was 20, you know? And of course, this isn't Veterans Day, this is Memorial Day, so it's not the ones who came back. But that's, you know, just thinking, pondering, remembering. It's good to have commemorations.
Not far from here is the statue of the three servicemen, the three fighting boys of Vietnam. It, too, has majesty and more. Perhaps you've seen it. Three rough boys walking together, looking ahead with a steady gaze. There's something wounded about them. A kind of resigned toughness, but there's an unexpected tenderness, too. At first, you don't really notice, but then you see it. The three are touching each other as if they're supporting each other, helping each other on. I know that many veterans of Vietnam will gather today, some of them perhaps by the wall, and they're still helping each other on.
Yeah, you occasionally see this even here in Pensacola at the memorial wall downtown, where a veteran will help another veteran, or somebody will just be there to touch them and hold them, and even a touch on the shoulder. Sometimes, you know, a reminder that we're there with you, as they're often touching the name on the wall that meant so much to them.
They were quite a group, the boys of Vietnam, boys who fought a terrible and vicious war without enough support from home. boys who were dodging bullets while we debated the efficacy of the battle. It was often our poor who fought in that war. It was the unpampered boys of the working class who picked up the rifles and went on the march. They learned not to rely on us. They learned to rely on each other.
And that's one of the things you hear a lot from folks in the military is, you know, kind of, what are you fighting for? Well, the country, orders, devotion, but it's each other. It's that band of brothers kind of mindset that, you know, it's these four people, these five people that I am closest to. Of even if in ordinary life we wouldn't get along, we wouldn't know each other, we might hate each other, we might fight and squabble, but, you know, it's like brothers do. But when the real time comes, we are 100% in devotion to each other.
We must always remember that peace is a fragile thing that needs constant vigilance. We owe them a promise to look at the world with a steady gaze and perhaps a resigned toughness, knowing that we have adversaries in the world and challenges, and the only way to meet them and maintain the peace is by staying strong. That, of course, is the lesson of this century, a lesson learned in the Sudetenland, in Poland, in Hungary, in Czechoslovakia, in Cambodia. If we really care about peace, we must stay strong.
Boy, you couldn't have a better reminder of that than today. And it's 40 years, right? 39 years ago that Reagan gave this speech. And at the time, 86, we still weren't done with the Cold War, right? This is before the fall of the Berlin Wall, 86. So he knew it well. He was, and he wasn't sort of proved right yet. I mean, it was still an uncertain thing what would happen with the Soviet Union. There was still any day, you never know what could happen with a nuclear war. And, of course, today, the sad thing is that we have kind of fallen into a lackadaisical attitude towards that, and we have neglected our duty to keep up and keep pace and be prepared. I mean, we collectively as a nation. I certainly don't mean we as the military. In fact, we as the military is one of the few places where they've really been trying. And I think the current administration understands this danger and is trying to do that as well.
If we really care about peace, we must, through our strength, demonstrate our unwillingness to accept an ending of the peace. We must be strong enough to create peace where it does not exist and strong enough to protect it where it does. That's the lesson of this century and, I think, of this day. That's all I wanted to say. The rest of my contribution is to leave this great place to its peace, a peace it has earned. Thank all of you, and God bless you, and have a day full of memories.
President Ronald Reagan in 1986, and he raises a thought I want to discuss a little bit in just a second, but hang on, let's get traffic on the fives in here with John Pickens. John?
Wow, I haven't heard that in a while. Very good. No accidents to let you know about right now. I-10, I-110, 90-98, even Highway 29 are flowing smoothly, not seeing any delays. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
You know, when somebody's in the military and they're off to war defending our country or our values or our foreign policy, and they die, it is very clear in a certain sense what they died for. And the reason we remember them on Memorial Day is because they died for our country, our values, our Constitution, our way of life, you and me and kids who go to school and kids who are in hot dog eating contests and kids who grew up and play baseball, right? That's okay. They traded their life, or they risked trading their life for that, just as anybody else who's in the military does. And in some sense, we look at that and, it, like I said, it's very, very clear. That transaction, their life for ours, their life for a system of government, their life for a set of values, their life for a kind of freedom. But I propose to you that everybody, every single person, every single human being dies for something. The difference is you don't do it all at once. You know, you're going to die. I'm going to die. John's going to die. David's going to die. Everybody's going to die. And when we die, we will have taken our 70 or 80 years filled with 365 days, filled with 24 hours, filled with 60 minutes, filled with 60 seconds. We will have traded that time for something, that life for something. We might have traded it for raising a child. We might have traded it for watching a TV show. We might have traded it for playing a game of Frisbee. You know, we might have traded it for reading a book. We might have traded it for talking on the radio. We might have traded it for bickering with somebody on the phone or swimming, or like every moment of every day, you're trading your life for something, right? Every day you can look back and say, I gave my 24 hours for something. You know, a lot of times we give a lot of our time for sleep. That's fine. We gave our time for eating, for cooking, for cleaning. Okay? And the only reason I mention that is because the real question that we should all be asking ourselves all the time is, am I happy with what I'm trading my life for? Am I proud of what I'm trading my life for? And you will not always answer that question yes. You won't. It's not possible to answer it. Because, I mean, what sort of life would it be? If you could always, I mean, it'd be amazing. But should always be trying. And this is, by the way, I don't say this because it's supposed to make you feel guilty about trading your life for leisure or pleasure or recreation or sleep or, you know, those are part of life too. But there's kind of this old expression or old idea that the person who most regrets their life is the person who at the end of it realizes they traded it for nothing. You know, it's like you spend your money on something. Maybe you spend your money on important things. Maybe you spend your money on frivolous things. You spend your money on all kinds of things. But you all spend your money on something. Well, you spend your life on something. A lot of times you trade those minutes or hours for money, which you then waste, you know, and that... I think about this in all kinds of connections. You know, I think about it in terms of, I was watching World War Z, you know, this zombie movie, right? Great action movie. And there's this one scene in the movie where they've all been evacuated to the ship. And, you know, they can only keep so many people on the ship because the people who are essential are the people who are family of essential. And they were actually shipping people off the ship who they didn't need anymore, couldn't sustain. But in the background, it's not focused on, but in the background, they were preserving works of art. They had paintings, presumably from the Smithsonian or from other, you know, major museums or whatever. And you might say, well, how dare they spend time, effort, resources preserving paintings when they could have been preserving an additional person? Okay. Or we as a community have esteemed that the time and the artistry and the skill that went into making that painting is worth lives because somebody traded lives for it. You know, the workers on Notre Dame traded their lives to make Notre Dame happen. The workers on the Washington Memorial Monument traded their lives. I mean, like, everything around us represents somebody's life investment, somebody's willingness to trade their life to put shingles on a roof, to trade their life to fix potholes, to trade their life to, you know, produce a radio show. And I say this particularly on Memorial Day because when it comes to soldiers and sailors and airmen and guardsmen, Marines, it's very vivid that they traded their life for something and that they risked dying in a moment for all of us. But it begs us to ask the question. To me, it begs us to ask the question. Am I honoring their sacrifice enough by making sure that I trade my life for things that make their trade worth trading? That's all. And I hope that perspective helps you think maybe about whether you're satisfied with the things you're trading your life for, because every single moment of every single day you make a trade with your time for something. The only question is whether you're proud of that. 723 on News Radio 92.3, I'm Andrew McKay.
Here's today's strength for life.
Memorial Day is much more than mattress sales, barbecues, and the Indy 500. While each of those things add to the festive nature of the three-day weekend, Memorial Day is our opportunity to honor people who've made the ultimate sacrifice for our nation. During our country's Civil War, over 600,000 soldiers gave their lives. During World War I, over 130,000 American soldiers died. And in World War II, 405,399 American soldiers gave their lives in that global conflict. It is to them that we all have a great debt. And it is on this day especially where we want to preserve their memory and commemorate their life. It's a Christ-like thing to sacrifice your life for the sake of others. Jesus died so that others could live. Take time this Memorial Day to commemorate the lives of fallen American soldiers, but also take time to reflect on the gracious sacrifice of the Lord Jesus Christ for sinners such as us.
For more Strength for Life, check out our website at strengthforlife.church.
You've built up the equity in your home. Now, a home equity line of credit from PinAir Credit Union can help you put it to great use. So build something incredible, like a backyard oasis or new walk-in shower. Invest in something special, like education or your business. Or just replace your roof. Boring, but important. Whatever you need, a home equity line of credit from PinAir is ready and waiting. And since there's no annual fee and no closing costs, a PinAir home equity line is always a perfect fit. Get started at pinair.org/HELOC. Federally insured by NCUA. Equal housing lender.
As she stared at me through the window, I realized the time we spent in the backyard on her trailer just wasn't fulfilling. We used to have so much fun on the water. I just couldn't crank her up. But Key Marine did. Fun days on the bay are back. And my Yamaha outboard runs better than ever.
Key Marine gets the work done and lets you handle the fun. Key Marine, your Yamaha outboard dealer on Bower Road in Pensacola. Google Key Marine or find them on Facebook.
Tune into the Pensacola Expert Panel tomorrow at 10 when Brittany Hughes from Parks and Recreation will be on the show. She'll be discussing summer camps, where they're located, the cost, and how you can apply for a scholarship for your child to attend. She'll also cover deadlines to register, how to register, and will be available for you to call or text in with your questions during the show.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
The Dave Ramsey Show. Weeknight 7 to 10 before WEAR-TV News on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
It's a living thing, Brian. It breathes, it eats, and it hates.
Good morning, 7:26 on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. It is Memorial Day, a very somber day when we also have a lot of parties, and that's okay. That's, you know, maybe what Full Metal Jacket Joker would have said is the duality of man. That's all right. John Pickens has got traffic on the fives. John?
Wow, that was deep, man. That was deep. Brought to you by Knox Pest Control, their family serving your family since 1929. For information on a free pest or termite quote, you can visit knoxpest.com. Knox knocks them out. Still rolling accident-free right now. Looks like I-10, I-110, Highway 29, 90, 98, even going through Gulf Breeze. There are no delays getting you onto Pensacola Beach either. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Right, born to kill on your helmet and you wear a peace button. What's that supposed to be, some kind of sick joke?
No, sir.
What is it supposed to mean?
I think I was trying to suggest something about the duality of man, sir.
The what?
The duality of man, the Jungian thing, sir.
Matthew Modine, impromptu philosopher. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
The alleged leader of a neo-Nazi group is pleading not guilty to federal charges. 21-year-old Michael Chikovichvili, known as the Commander Butcher, who allegedly helped lead the maniac murder cult, was extradited from Moldova to New York last week. Prosecutors say he inspired several crimes, including the school shooting in Nashville, Tennessee, a mass stabbing outside of a mosque in Turkey, and the brutal murder of a woman in Romania. Friday, he pleaded not guilty to multiple charges, including conspiring to solicit hate crimes and transmitting threatening communications. Could face up to 50 years in prison if he's convicted as charged. An All Nippon Airways International flight was diverted to Seattle after a passenger allegedly attempted to open the exit doors mid-flight. That flight was headed from Tokyo to Houston, Texas, and the unruly passenger came into play about 10 hours into the flight. Port of Seattle police report that the individual was restrained by passengers and crew and then later taken to a hospital for a medical evaluation. And 11 people are in the hospital after a shooting in South Carolina yesterday. The Horry County Police Department reported more victims may have even been taken to hospitals in private vehicles. An investigation into that shooting is ongoing, but police say it was an isolated incident.
All right, David, thanks so much for the update. By the way, there is some weather not affecting us, but is over western Mississippi, southern Arkansas, northern basically Louisiana, and then there's a little spur that goes all the way in towards Dallas into Texas. And the only reason I mention that is because we do have a little bit of flight delay coming in from DFW. It's expected at 7:55 to 7:25. The DFW that's supposed to be at 10:47 is going to be delayed till afternoon. New York is also affected by this a little bit. I was going to take a quick look at the departures as well. And it looks like everything is on time there. But, you know, a little bit of weather that doesn't directly affect. But if you're flying on Memorial Day, which a lot of people do, it might be time to just pay a little extra attention to how things might have changed. That's why you have your phone alerts, right? 729 on News Radio 92.3. If you're thinking about buying or selling a home, a beach home, a home in the city. You're on the beach now and you want to move to the city. I don't know. You know, everybody's got different desires. Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenrinke Realty, she can help you with that. Sold 165 homes last year, 175 homes the year before that, and they just click along three and a half, four a week, week after week after week. And they kind of have this system. And she talks about it when she does pep talk, but, you know, the way they stage, the way they set the open house, the way they price, the way they photograph and list things online, and it really works effectively. And, in fact, she was saying recently that, you know, the market that had been down for a little while is now kind of coming back somewhat, that on some homes anyway, they are starting to see more like multiple offers. So knowing how to really maximize the value of the home that you're selling or minimize the home that you're buying, either way. 786-3996. Get a good expert to help you. Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenrinke Realty.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. Phone call from the European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen to President Trump will hopefully lead to fruitful trade discussions between the U.S. and the 27-member bloc.
Von der Leyen says it was a good call. The EU and U.S. share the world's most consequential and close trade relationship. Europe is ready to advance talks swiftly and decisively.
Fox's Rebecca Castor reporting. A spokesperson for the EU says its trade rep will speak with Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick this afternoon. Thousands filling the National Mall in our nation's capital last night to watch this year's National Memorial Day concert.
United States Navy!
Concert on PBS. America's paying tribute to the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, Coast Guard, and Space Force. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 7:31 at News Radio 92.3. It is partly cloudy, a beautiful morning, 77 degrees right now, and partly cloudy skies. Escambia County investigators looking into a drive-by shooting that happened on Saturday on Devane Street. This was reported about 4 a.m. that morning. Officials say the gunfire was reported as targeting a camper trailer. Nobody was hurt. A search for suspects is ongoing. If you have any information, contact the Escambia Sheriff's Office, or you can call Crime Stoppers. Also, a suspect taken to the hospital after a deputy-involved shooting yesterday. The Sheriff's Office says a deputy responded to University Town Plaza for a trespassing call. They were notified of a disturbance and several gunshots at the nearby 850 Fusion restaurant. When the deputy was investigating that, officials say he was confronted by an armed suspect. The deputy fired towards that suspect. However, it is unknown whether their injuries were from those gunshots or from the previously reported gunshots. Fortunately, the deputy was not injured. The Florida Department of Law Enforcement is investigating this incident. A 61-year-old man's been arrested for DUI after a crash in Santa Rosa County that left a 16-year-old seriously injured on Saturday. Authorities say Arthur Belton veered into the teen's lane on State Road 399 near the Navarre Beach Causeway Bridge, causing a head-on collision. The teenager was driving a pickup truck. He was transported to a local trauma center with serious injuries. Belton is now being held in the Santa Rosa County Jail on $2,500 bond. A Pensacola man suffered minor injuries after a crash with two ambulances on Saturday. That happened on Blue Angel near Longleaf Drive. FHP says the two Escambia ambulances were headed west on Blue Angel when they approached traffic that was stopped. The first ambulance and the SUV did stop. The second ambulance didn't notice the stopped traffic and rear-ended the SUV, which pushed it into the rear of the first ambulance. The SUV and one of the ambulances were disabled due to the accident. The SUV driver was taken to the hospital for evaluation. No other injuries were reported. Florida lawmakers approving two major bills, and they've been sent to Governor Ron DeSantis' desk. One of those bills bans elementary and middle school students from using cell phones throughout the school day. It also creates a pilot program for testing the ban in high schools in six counties. The second bill, called Trooper's Law, makes it a felony to restrain dogs outside during natural disasters. That law was inspired by a dog rescued during Hurricane Milton. Both of those measures now await the governor's signature. It's 7:34 at News Radio 92.3. Expect some isolated rain chances for your Memorial Day. Temperatures will be in the mid to upper 80s, low 90s today through midweek. Rain chances continuing through next weekend. And if you're headed to the beach, the risk of rip currents is reportedly low to moderate. Yellow flags are currently flying. 7:34 at News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our market report from Your Money Now.
I'm Chad Robison with Your Money Now. The richest 10 Americans got $365 billion richer over the past year, according to a new analysis from Oxfam. The stunning increase in wealth amounts to a gain of roughly $1 billion a day for those billionaires. By contrast, the typical American worker made just over $50,000 in 2023. Oxfam found that it would take a staggering 726,000 years for 10 U.S. workers at median earnings to make that much money. Elon Musk alone got $186 billion richer, according to the analysis. As fast food staple Burger King enters the next phase of its turnaround efforts, the chain is trying to lure families back with colored Whopper buns and kid-friendly movie partnerships. Parent Restaurant Brands International will sell new menu items inspired by the live-action remake of How to Train Your Dragon. The markets are closed today for the holiday and will reopen tomorrow. That's Your Money Now.
And at 7:35, let's get a look at our traffic on the fives with John Pickens.
That's right. No accidents to report to you right now. Looks like I-10, I-110, even 98, Highway 90, and Bob Sykes Bridge are all looking good this morning. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thank you very much, John. 77 degrees, sunshine right now. Our next news at 8, breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne, News Radio 92.3.
It's always Sonny's here. This is Eldon with Sonny's Barbecue. When you're ready for slow smoke barbecue prepared by local pitmasters since 1968, it's always Sonny's. Visit us at four convenient locations in the News Radio area: Pine Forest, Navy Boulevard, 9th Avenue, and in Pace on Highway 90. With $10 big deals and all-you-can-eat ribs for only $19.99 every day. Kids eat free every Saturday, and don't forget that good old banana pudding, all served with a heaping portion of Southern hospitality. Open daily at 10:45. And remember, it's always Sonny's here.
News Radio 92.3 is proud to be a partner in the success of a lot of local businesses. We want your business to be part of this success story in 2025 with our unique platform to showcase your powerful message. Every day, News Radio's Pensacola Expert Panel provides an opportunity unlike any other. Hi, I'm Meg, host of the Pensacola Expert Panel. Let us help you share your message. Contact us to get you and your business part of the Pensacola Expert Panel. Call 850-262-6000.
Ready for intelligent and thought-provoking conversation? Tune in to The Guy Benson Show on News Radio Pensacola. Weekdays from 2 till 4 p.m. on 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Guy Benson, the brilliant and charismatic host, brings you a fresh perspective on the biggest stories of the day. Guy keeps you engaged and informed. Don't miss out on the intellectual thrill ride. Tune in to The Guy Benson Show on News Radio Pensacola from 2 till 4 p.m. It's the show that'll challenge your thinking and leave you wanting more. On News Radio Pensacola.
Tenure-track faculty at the University of West Florida undergo a rigorous tenure process, typically spanning 6 years. Each department has a set of bylaws that outline the criteria for tenure, from which tenure candidates are evaluated across three areas: teaching, research, and service. The relevant authority for tenure is the UWF-UFF collective bargaining agreement, 16-2D, and as well as the university tenure and promotion guidelines.
This is Jeremy Cool. He is the provost at University of West Florida, and this is from a meeting that was a couple of weeks ago, but I never had a chance to get these clips on the air, and I thought it's an interesting setup for tomorrow's special meeting that is going to deal with the resignation of Martha Saunders, the possible appointment of a new interim, which is almost certainly going to be Manny Diaz. We'll see maybe even a job review by Adam Kissel. That's interesting. But I thought, as a former teacher, as a former professor, that it was adjunct, okay, that it was interesting to hear them talk about tenure and the quality of the professors and how they go through this process, because tenure is one of those things you don't normally get a perspective on how this happens as a, you know, non-educator. And I found it particularly interesting also, again, as a kind of a slice of insight into the health at UWF, the kind of place that doesn't really need big reforms. Anyway, Jeremy Cool continues.
A mid-tenure review occurs in the candidate's third year, during which departmental faculty and chair assess the candidate's progress toward tenure. And then in most cases, the formal tenure dossier is submitted to the department chair at the beginning of the sixth year. This dossier undergoes a comprehensive review process over the course of approximately 9 months. The evaluation process includes the following components: 3 external reviews, department faculty vote, department chair review, college personnel committee review, dean's review. There is a university personnel committee review unless all previous levels unanimously recommend tenure. There's the provost review as well as the president's review.
And I know this is not the most thrilling account. I'm just giving you the actual account of how it works so that you can understand where the controversy kind of comes from a little bit here in a moment, or semi-non-controversy anyway. Just, again, laying out, this is a very rigorous process.
Each of the 10 tenure candidates has undergone this process, and I am pleased to recommend each candidate for tenure. Each of these individuals met or exceeded the criteria established within their respective departmental bylaws.
Okay, so we have minimum standards for tenure, and all 10 exceed that. They have very good standards. Remember, Adam Kissel is the guy who was nominated by DeSantis, was put on the board, and then was declined by the Senate. Didn't even have a vote in the full Senate because he was declined on his second committee hearing. He is still on the board because the governor has the ability to appoint him, even though he was declined by the Senate, at least temporarily. He's been one of the controversial figures. He's the only real controversial figure that remains on the board. Well, and then that's not quite true. We have, all of a sudden the other one's name is Smith, but I forget his first name. But I have been kind of an advocate of Adam Kissel. I know a lot of people cannot understand why I advocate for him. I advocate for him because he has a contrary perspective and he's fair. In my opinion, he's been very fair, very thoughtful, very informed. Even the other members of the board have often talked about how his knowledge base on certain things is quite high. But put that aside, here's the question that he asked of the provost.
About how much time at the provost and presidential level do you spend on each of the tenure dossiers?
You ever have yourself that moment in a meeting where somebody asks you a question and you just feel your butt tense up a little bit? Because you're like, oh, I wasn't really prepared to answer this question. Because he's asking the provost, okay, there's a provost review. How much time does that take? I mean, is that 3 minutes per candidate? Is that 3 days per candidate? You know, I mean, it's a little bit of a challenge question, right? Let's explore.
So at the provost level, I have them for about a month.
Much time do you spend per person?
See, that's a follow-up. Because a month is not an answer. How much per person are you actively spending on this?
Per person? I read through the dossier, read through the statement of contributions. I read through the CV. I look at the department bylaws, make sure that the criteria are being met. And so each one usually takes anywhere between an hour to 2 hours. And then I usually spend some time thinking on it. And I come back to it and make a decision.
Great.
And by the way, and that's a good, perfectly fine answer. At the provost level, it shouldn't be more than that. I mean, I don't think that, you know, it's gone through so many layers before it gets to him. But the answer shouldn't be, well, 3 minutes or 30 seconds. And, you know, his job basically to make sure that everything's in compliance, check all the boxes, make sure that all the standards have been met.
The reason I ask is that usually when tenure candidates come before trustees. I think it was unusual for me to ask to see the interfolio file, to see the dossiers of the 10 candidates.
What he's mentioning there, and I apologize for kind of mansplaining this a little bit, but what he's saying is that a lot of times when it comes before the Board of Trustees, final checkbox, right? It's very much a formality and people don't look in the details. And he's saying, but I do. And it seems to have been rare because you can, I guess you can see how many times the file's been accessed or the people look at you funny when you ask for the file. But he's saying, no, I look at the file and not everybody does. Now, some do, but not everybody does.
And it seems pretty unusual for trustees to be put in a position, well, not unusual, but it seems standard for trustees to be put in a position where we don't really know almost anything about the candidates and we're just asked to batch them all and say yes.
Yeah, which is maybe not the best way. You either, yeah, and sometimes you have formalities, okay? Sometimes there's just, you know, what they call ministerial duties, things that you do that you just expected to do, and it doesn't really matter, but you always, I think it's right to raise the question of, well, if I don't really have any role here, why do I have a role here, right? If I'm being asked to vote on something, shouldn't I get information, sort through the ideas, and really think about it?
I hope that all of you asked for access to Interfolio so that you can look at the dossiers for yourself and make up your own mind about what you think is the right answer in each of those 10 cases for the university. If you're like me, you're going to understand some of the research and are not going to understand a bunch of the rest of it. That's just the position that we're in. We're talking about very seasoned and smart people who do hard research and in most cases are huge contributors to the university in teaching, research, and service, and we should be proud to have them. But that may not be the case in every case. So please ask for interfolio access. Make up your own mind when it comes before the full board.
And by the way, I love that observation, that willingness to say, hey, these are genuine experts in their field. I don't presume to be a comparable expert in all 10 of these fields to even evaluate their research. That's why we have departments evaluate. That's why it would be ridiculous for a board of trustee member, for a trustee to think, I am capable of evaluating the qualifications for tenure of 10 people in 10 different fields. I mean, that would be absurdly arrogant. So I love that he says that. It doesn't mean you can't ask. Doesn't mean you can't look. You know, you may see things that you find interesting, or you may see things that stand out because you happen to know something, but you shouldn't presume you know it all. And I mean, he's exactly right about that. Otherwise, what are they doing? You know, if you can know everything about everything they're doing, then they're not doing their jobs either, right? That would be a silly situation, too. We'll come back to this in a second because the follow-up conversations by other board members, fascinating. John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
Still rolling accident-free right now. I-10, I-110 are all looking good, not seeing any delays on Garcelon Point, 98 or 90. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. Back to the Board of Trustees meeting. This is from a couple of weeks ago for UWF. This is Alonzi Scott, one of the holdover board members who has had, you know, encounters with, or at least arguments with, Zach Smith. The new trustee that's been on both PSC and UWF board, the one who very aggressively questioned Martha Saunders in the last meeting. I thought very inappropriately. Anyway, Alonzi Scott, and he had words. Anyway, so Alonzi says, I have a different approach. Remember, he's the one that works with the Office of Naval Research.
I was going to say that one of the things I try to do when I see something like this for board members, one is I trust the university personnel, Dr. Cole and the faculty, to select people that they think will best serve our students. I am in no position, nor is any board member here, in any position to determine what the criteria should be for an educated professionals. None of you are professors and pretty much, well, maybe some of you are, but I trust the board members to provide me that insight. I look at it as if I was a flag commander working a op project. I'm gonna get the information from the best people around me and hopefully make the best decision. Should I read every little detail involved with that? I could. If I have a special interest, and I do in one area, which is cybersecurity and information technology, I would probably read that one. The others, I would rely solely on my folks at the university level, because that's what we hired them to do.
And this is a good debate to have, because on the one, like the two extremes here would be, I'm going to review every single thing that anybody does, and if I don't understand it, then I'm going to ask questions or say no. That would be one extreme, a silly extreme. The other extreme would be, I don't need to read it. They've gone through this process. It's pure formality for me. And Adam Kissel is sort of like representing a 7 on this scale, and Alonzi Scott is representing more like a 3 or 4. I'm more going to defer and to allow the subordinates or the teachers and the educators in this case to, you know, be the experts in their field. Both views have merit. It's just that you shouldn't be a zero and you shouldn't be a 10. Susan James, who is the Senate faculty president, the representative of the Senate of the faculty on the board.
I have spent quite a bit of time going through Interfolio. I obviously know what this process is all about. A couple of things I just want us to keep in mind as we're going through these is that we are a regional comprehensive university and we place emphasis on teacher, but I think you're really going to be impressed by the amount of research that each one of these candidates has. And you're also going to be very impressed that many of their letters are written by Research One institutions.
And so she's basically saying they're all very, very qualified. And here's the moment in this conversation where you don't quite know what to expect out of Adam Kissel. I don't know what to expect out of Adam Kissel. Is he going to come up with objections? Are they going to hold a couple of these people or is he going to vote no on them? You know, I don't know what to expect at this point. It's certainly possible. Is it likely? Again, I don't know. And so I'm waiting to find out, are the new members, the, you know, Governor DeSantis appointed folks who have just gotten in and have now attacked Martha Saunders, are they going to, you know, are they going to attack any of these candidates? It's an open question. That's kind of the dramatic moment. And he says,
my view is basically the same as yours. We have fantastic professors in front of us in almost every case. Some folks who are exceeding expectations by 4 or 5 times what the minimum standards are at the same time that they're teaching tons of courses. So University of West Florida has been doing a great job with the vast majority of its professors who I've seen out of these 10. I do think there's one who's a close call. I'm not going to name that person. I would rather just have all 10 batch together and have us vote on all 10 of them together. But I do encourage the other board members just to make up your own minds. You may think none of them are a close call. You might think all of them easily should get a yes. But that's up to each one of you when it's your turn to decide.
See, that's the kind of comment that makes me like Adam Kissel. Because what is he? First of all, he says the university is so healthy that we've got professors who are exceeding their tenure requirements or qualifications by a factor of 4 or 5. Which, that's the point. They're fantastic, genuinely fantastic, not just good enough. And then he says, but there's one, and it seems like a close call, but I'm not going to make a thing of it. I don't even want to name their name, which is a very kind of gracious way to approach it. You know, he's saying it's close, but I'm a yes. And if you even say that person's name, you know what you do? You put kind of a mark against them in public. You kind of, I mean, that would be a way of negatively impacting potentially their reputation, their career path, and he's not going to say that. I mean, I respect that. I think that's actually a very admirable way to approach it. And he just says, yeah, we're good with all of these. And unless somebody else has a problem with any of them, back to Susan James, the Senate faculty president.
Each professor, a lot of them come from different departments, and the bylaws that are there that will show you whether they meet those expectations or exceed them, they're all different bylaws. And that's based on the differing field. So make sure when you're looking at those, you are comparing them to those bylaws. And if they meet those bylaws, then that means they should be awarded the tenure and promotion.
Yeah, and that's a good point too. She's saying that every faculty member is obligated to hit different standards because of different fields and different departments. And so there's not like one standard for tenure across the entire faculty system. It's each department. You got to measure them based on those standards. And so it takes a lot of work to really figure all that out. And they wound up approving all of them. I just thought it was, you know, as we're getting ready to have what I expect to be a fairly contentious meeting tomorrow, and, you know, who God knows what's going to come out of it. You know, we'll see. But I thought this, A, was useful as a little picture into how professors get tenure, a very significant position of trust and authority in our society, and cost, right, for the rest of their life. Unless something serious goes wrong, they're going to be getting this paycheck. And also that there's a lot of rigor that goes into it. It's not purely a formality, and it shouldn't really purely be a formality. 7:53 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
As a business owner, you've got a lot on your plate. Managing staff, growing your business, training new hires, and more. With so much going on, you need Avalon. As an IRS-certified PEO, Avalon HR can help. From running your payrolls, remitting state and federal taxes, workers' compensation insurance, employee benefits, and our HR expertise. Avalon HR lets you focus on your core business while we handle the rest. Employing made easy. AvalonHR.com.
Did you know you can get your prescriptions for less at your local pharmacy? You can with GoodRx. It's the free app that can save you money on your medications. Just search for your prescription, choose the pharmacy and the price that works best for you, and then show your GoodRx coupon to your pharmacist at the drop-off counter. GoodRx works at over 70,000 pharmacies, including Walmart, Rite Aid, and Walgreens, and it works whether you have insurance or not. It's easy to save. Next time you drop off your prescription, check GoodRx. To start saving today, go to GoodRx.com. GoodRx is not insurance.
May is Older Americans Month. Join Dawn and a patient from Ashner Navant Health 65 Plus on the Pensacola Expert Panel tomorrow at 10:30. They'll be highlighting aging trends, answering questions and texts, and discuss how Ashner Navant Health 65 Plus can help you, who they are, and where they're located on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Stream us online at newsradio923.com or download the News Radio Pensacola app.
You're despicable.
Good morning, 7:55 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable, and Jam Master Jay Pickens is over here going to tell you about traffic on the fives on this Memorial Day, John.
Wow, I like that. Wow. No accidents.
I could call you Pop Master Jay, but people would misunderstand what that means because they would think it's marijuana instead of the individual sliders on your mixer board.
Oh, yeah. I would have confused it. All right, no accidents to report to you right now. Looks like I-10, I-110, Highway 29, 90, 98, everything is rolling smoothly. I'm not seeing any delays anywhere. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the 5.
As expected. The kids aren't working. The adults aren't working. Everybody's just relaxing today, except us. And law enforcement and firefighters and nurses. And, you know, there's a lot of people still at work. And all the people who own the, you know, stores and retail operations that you go to today. Okay. David Wayne has got our news in the newsroom. David?
Don't confuse me with Jam Master J over there.
News Master D.
Well, thank you. The Senate set to take up the big, beautiful bill after the House narrowly passed it by a single vote. Senate Republicans have promised to make some changes. House Speaker Mike Johnson tells CNN he thinks that's a bad idea. Well, apparently my audio is going to be finicky right now, so we won't play that. But Johnson says estimates that millions could lose Medicaid health care benefits are misleading due to many of them being illegal immigrants or able-bodied men that are committing fraud by choosing not to work.
Yeah, but the objections from people like Rand Paul and Senator Johnson are not they're not about that stuff. It's about expanding the debt limit and giving tax cuts that are going to wind up expanding the amount of debt that we own and, you know, or that we owe, and then putting that on future generations. They're not, you know, they're not worried about the able-bodied worker Medicaid stuff. They're worried about the other stuff that's going to cost trillions of dollars. Anyway, go ahead, David.
Phil Robertson, the patriarch of A&E's Duck Dynasty, has passed away at 79. His family announced his death yesterday. Robertson had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease back in December. His daughter-in-law, Corey, expressed gratitude for the support and prayers from those touched by his life. A private funeral service being held, and they're planning a public celebration of his life later on. And Volodymyr Zelensky criticizing the U.S. and international community for their silence after Russia's largest aerial assault here over the weekend. It killed 12 people at least. The barrage included more than 350 drones and missiles and targeted 30 cities and villages across Ukraine. President Donald Trump has now condemned Vladimir Putin for needlessly killing civilians, but also suggested Zelensky's comments were not helpful.
All right, David, thanks so much for the update. 437-1620. Oh, man, it's getting warm out. And warm means bugs. Bugs, we had the termite infestation in 2025. That's come and gone, at least for us it did. I don't know about your area, but you know, people get it different times. But if you have bugs, you have ants, you have roaches. Oh, my God, I saw like a 3-inch roach the other day. I thought I was going to have to wrestle it hand to hand. But, yeah, I mean, you know, mosquitoes, right? All of these things. You can try to handle it yourself and get the results that that gets, which is usually not that great. But what NSEC will do is they'll come out, they'll identify, target, and eliminate the common household pests like roaches, ants, fleas, rodents with guaranteed results. Professionally trained technicians safely and effectively eliminate those pests both inside and outside your home while also taking preventative steps to stop other ones from getting into your home. The technicians are professional, courteous, thoroughly trained. They show up on time. You get a report emailed to you with the photos, what was found, what was used to treat it, follow up, right, to make pest control easier than ever. They offer a number of pest control plans to stop pests from infesting your home. Inspection, treatment, follow up, and for a limited time, new annual pest control customers get $50 off. Some restrictions apply, so make sure you see NSEC.com for the details. Free estimates always. Sign up today at NSEC, E-N-S-E-C. .net. Coming up next, we continue with Memorial Day, and we'll talk with Sheriff Bob Johnson, Santa Rosa County Sheriff Bob Johnson. Some interesting things happening in Santa Rosa County over the last week or so. Also, the Favor House Roundup comes up June 13th from 6 to 10 p.m. at the Escambia County Equestrian Center. Great cause benefiting Favor House of Northwest Florida. One of the terrible things that happens to respond to, or a good thing that responds to a terrible thing. Local.